Blog Talk Radio.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 1 hour a week. Tune in to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagenhals. She'll show you how without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhals.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. How are you all doing this fabulous Saturday, May 30th of 2009? Welcome to the show. My name is Heather Wagenhals, and I am your hostess with the Financial Mostess, bringing you 2 hours of information-packed finance, credit, debt, and money management tools, also you can become financially independent. This week, this Money May Saturday the 30th, the last day of May, and the last day of our Money May promotion, we are broadcasting live from the Log Mahal in Payson, Arizona. And this Saturday, as well as every Saturday at 10 a.m., we broadcast Unlock Your Wealth Radio and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help every man, woman, and child alike manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of financial independence. This is an exciting broadcast because I have a bevy of 12 and 13-year-old boys up here at the same time wanting to be my studio audience, but as you know how boys of that age are, they screw around and they chit-chat, and so I'm not going to be able to concentrate unless I keep them on the other side of the door. But anyway, I would like to thank them all for watching, and stop the sugar, for goodness sakes. Anyway, we have an incredible show this week. We have our trivia question with an autographed book and coaching for the winner. We have two fabulous guests. We have our regular segment of Minutes on Your Money. Our Investor's Edge has a special guest. Karen Gurm is back to bring us news by the numbers. And, of course, nuts and bolts. And this week's key, which is no seasonal exceptions. I can't believe we are winding down the season. It's so amazing. I can't believe we're almost through this round of all of the keys. I wanted to say a couple of things up front to all of you who are participating in the show, either live or downloading our broadcast later. I want to send a big thank you out to all of you. Each and every one of you has made us the top three downloaded show for wealth and money management. We are always in the top five as far as finance shows are concerned, and I'm so grateful to all of you who not only seek out our information but also send us comments and subscribe to our e-zine and follow us on Twitter. We had an incredible response from our Money May tweet program. So as a result of that, we are going to continue with our inspirational quotes, financial tips, and money madness through the summer. It worked out so well, and it did because of all of you. And every week we are trying to enrich this broadcast and daily provide you information to help give you the tools and the emotional strength to change your attitudes toward money management so you too can be financially independent. We've got this week on tap our trivia question, and for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, we do a trivia question every week. You can call in to win fabulous prizes. So we have an autographed book from one of our guests, as well as a 13-week coaching package from the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation that gives you not only the tools, but the strength and accountability you need to help become financially independent. And this week's question is derived from the previous week's broadcast. So one of the greatest things about being on Blog Talk Radio is the fact that if you miss the show live, it's not a problem because you can go and download the previous broadcast and listen at your leisure. You can download it into a variety of formats, listen live on your computer, or I'm sorry, listen to the download on your computer, or put it on your MP3 player or iPod. So how cool is that? So you never have to be at a loss for the answers for the trivia question. So we always take the trivia question from last week's broadcast. So if you haven't had an opportunity to listen live, you still won't miss out. Plus, you'll get all of that bonus financial information by downloading, too. Now, here is your extra edge in order to do research when you go to listen, and that is subscribe to the electronic magazine for the radio show. The e-zine that we have comes out every week before the show with the trivia question in it. So if you hadn't listened, you can still have time to know what the question is and then listen to the previous broadcast to look for the answers. You're saying, Heather, how do I get involved with the e-zine? Well, a couple of different ways as we become more and more sophisticated. On the show page, I have actually put a way to sign up for the e-zine. You can go and just drop your email in there if you're already at the show page today. If you're not at the show page, you can go one of two ways. One, to our website, and at the website, all you have to do is look for the bar that says, sign me up, I want to be a part of that e-zine. And if that's not convenient, or you want to do path of least resistance, simply send us an email, and we will get you subscribed. The bonus with emails is, if you send an email, any collateral materials we are offering with the show, you can get a copy of those for free. Woo, free. Gotta love it. Why is free a four-letter word? Not because it's bad. I'm tired of people saying, oh, if it's free, it can't be good. But free is good here at the Unlock Your Wealth radio show, and the more free you have, the less money you have to spend, and the more you have left over to invest. So if you're going to send us an email, simply send it to ezine, E-Z-I-N-E, at unlockyourwealth.com. That's ezine at unlockyourwealth.com. You can go straight to the website, unlockyourwealth.com, or, again, at the bottom of the show page, we have an opportunity to sign up there where you can drop your email address in and push a button. It's that simple, folks. So today's question, which we will answer in the next hour, is this. Last week we talked about why not to buy a home. And we discussed three bad reasons. So if you can give me one of the three bad reasons not to buy a home, you too can potentially win coaching and an autographed book by one of our featured guests. So I'm so excited. Now, remember, don't call in now. Call in shortly. But that number to call in, when I give you the appropriate heads up, is 1-718-508-9002. That's 1-718-508-9002. On tap for the show this week, with our keynote seasonal exceptions, we have Jodine Spire. She's our breakup expert, and she's going to help us keep our emotions in check and how do we dissociate ourselves from financial drains. So she's going to be pretty exciting. Minutes on Your Money this week, we have 10 ways to slash your grocery bill, 9 ways to fail better. What? Did I just say fail? Yeah. 9 ways to fail better, 12 steps to become a millionaire, and calm counsel for a cash crisis. Our investor's edge is pretty exciting because we have not one but two guests. At the same time, they are co-authors. Dr. Dennis Cavier and Alan Lesate will speak about their book, which is The ABCs of Making Money, and they're going to tell you what mistakes people made or make with money and how to avoid them. As always, we will have our regularly scheduled segments, News by the Numbers, with our fabulous correspondent, Karen Gurm. nuts and bolts, we're going to talk specifically about no seasonal exceptions, what that really means, and how do we implement tools to be successful at avoiding the pitfalls of holiday and special occasion financial outlays. We'll go through the key in its entirety this week, as well as our key statement, key affirmation item, and key action item for the week. So moving forward, let's get into our minutes on your money. I like Psychology Today. It's a pretty nifty publication. And we have June's publication already hot off the presses. And I was flipping through. There was a money article I liked that we'll also talk about. But this one I thought was pretty exciting. And some of us, and I probably should have kept this article for Forget the Perfection Principle key coming up in a couple weeks. But I just wanted to bring this information to you because the sooner you have it, the faster you can use it. And failing better essentially boils down to these things, to controlling our emotions, to adjusting our thinking, and recalibrating our beliefs. And in this article, it says 9 ways to fail better. Some people learn from failure and bounce back stronger. For others, failure destroys them. But here's how you can be one of the ones who rises from the ashes. And this is brought to us by Bruce Grierson. Number one, he says, lighten up. Most people who bounce back from setbacks have a sense of humor. They know when they are taking things and themselves too seriously. We often are so paralyzed by the fear of failure that we self-handicap. We sabotage ourselves by putting an impediment in the way, says personal coach Stephen Berglish. Because, hey, if something prevented you from trying your best, you can't be said to have failed, right? So now we're playing victim, and it's not my fault. You know, at least, you know, that's what I kind of feel what happens when we self-sabotage is because we're so afraid of it, and, you know, because what you focus on, you bring to fruition. And if you're focusing on failing, well, sure enough, you're gonna. If you focus on success, you're going to be successful. It's just that simple. The mind is not as complex as people like to make it out to be, even though we have billions of neurosynaptic responses every millisecond that we're alive. It's pretty simple when it comes to decision making and things like that. What you think about, you bring about. So if you're thinking about being successful with your money management, that's what's going to happen. But if you're that person that says, oh, I'm just not good with money, you're affirming your inability to be successful. So I think that that's really important. And he says also that it's hard to find the funny in the fine grain. Humor is about stepping back for a fresh perspective. And one of the things that I've always said that I thought was, you know, a little clever quip and a comeback when people say, how can you laugh? This is serious. And I'm like, well, if I wouldn't be laughing, I'd be crying. So, yes, if I wouldn't be laughing, I'd be crying. So I try to keep a sense of humor with everything. And, you know, if I'm not dead from whatever it is, I have the opportunity to make a difference and change whatever just happened. Number two, join the club. I don't like this one so much, but he says, misery loves company. Just look at the growth of web-based support groups, like 15 million recession-touched people on Facebook and Global Depression Support Group on meetup.com. There's real value in commiseration, I'm not sure what, other than saying, God, these people are worse off than I am. I guess I'm not so bad. Let me get back to work. I'm sorry. That's my editorial embellishment. When Montrealer Sylvain Henry started a Facebook support group called Recession Survivors after being laid off from a software company, the group became a lightning rod for pain and blame. You've got to blame someone, right? Henry says, whose fault is this? People vented about the lost house, the failed marriage. It was cathartic. Then something happened. People vented themselves out, Henry said. After that came another impulse. Let's do something about this. The members begin posting productive hints, little money-saving tips about budget-friendly cookie recipes, or how to throw a good garage sale. The site transformed into a clearinghouse of resourceful coping strategies for hard times, calling it Failing Better, the Open Source Edition. So that's the one concern that I have when people get so involved with commiseration, is because, you know, if you surround yourself with success, it's inevitable that you'll be successful because their good habits will rub off on you. So you got to be careful with these. So I say, you know, use this one lightly. Number three, feel the guilt, not the shame. The difference between guilt and shame is the reason we assign as to why failure occurs, notes Richard Robbins, a psychologist at the University of California at Davis. Guilt says it's something I did, but shame means feeling failure because of something I am, in which case you expect failure and don't act to avoid it. So this is an important one, and I really like this one. Because it separates, it clearly defines guilt and shame, and it separates this, you know, because, you know, it's just like when you scold your children and you say, you're bad. Well, the kid wasn't necessarily bad, just his actions were bad. And how that child interprets that information, if he interprets it as guilt, then it's like, oh, I did something wrong, I won't do that again. But if he internalizes it and it becomes shame, it's like, ooh, not the thing that I did was wrong, but I'm wrong or I'm bad. So feeling guilt and not shame, I like this one. Number four, cultivate optimism. Of the seven learnable skills of resilience, emotion, awareness, impulse control, multi-perspective thinking, empathy, the belief that you can solve your own problems, taking appropriate risks, and optimism, the most important is optimism, says Karen Reivich, a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so, says Hamlet. Indeed, paying attention to the positive infuses the world with hope and creates a climate in which failure loses its sting. Number five, ask not what the world can do for you. Getting fired and left without savings or healthcare coverage is rough, but for some, it carries an unexpected message. Now you are free. Free to do something more meaningful with your life, like volunteering overseas. If you don't have to earn money right away, ask yourself, how can you be of service to others? I kind of like that one. You know, sometimes, you know, I lived off to a boss years ago, and I always practice this mantra in my life to live my life without regret, so I carefully consider the things I'm going to do before I do them. So if it's risky, I'm prepared to accept the consequences and not feel guilty because I think guilt is a wasted emotion. And so in doing so, I lipped off to a boss, and I had never felt more remorseful in my life because he fired me right there on the spot. I was trying to defend myself, but I probably wasn't using the most appropriate verbiage to convey that I was being wronged. And in so doing, I'd never regretted that decision so much, or any other decision, as much as I had that one. And I really wallowed, and I beat myself up about it. But, folks, I would not be sitting here today had that not happened to me. And if there's anything I can share with you is, you know, you have to believe that bad, good, or indifferent, every decision you make is the right decision. And that's because it takes you to the next right decision you'll make. And while I thought it was the end of my world, it was only the end of my world as I knew it. And as one door closed, another one opened to the most incredible world that I live in right now. And that's how I'm able to bring you this stuff today. Had I not, I'd probably still be there. Well, probably not, because I don't have that big of an attention span. But nonetheless, I may not have chosen this path had I not been motivated by someone else to choose it. So I'm excited about that. So don't think it's the end of the world when you lose your job. It's a new opportunity. Really quick, because our upcoming guest is holding. Number six, scale down your expectations for yourself. when we succeed, we tend to just ratchet ourselves and our expectations up and not get a lot of pleasure out of it. But when we fail, it's much harder to ratchet down our expectations for ourselves. That might be what failing well is, says psychologist Jonathan Haidt, a willingness to lower our sights when that's realistically required. And Gilbert Brim begins his book, Ambition, with the story of his father in rural Connecticut, or rather his father's window box. As a young man, his father took pride in maintaining the forest on the whole property, but eventually that task became impossible. As he grew older and weaker, he reduced the range and scope until he was content to just tend the flowers in his window box. Number 7, harness the Bridget Jones effect. Keeping a journal can help you cope with failure. Jamie Pennebaker, a psychologist at University of Texas, studied middle-aged engineers who lost their jobs. Those who wrestled with their feelings about the trauma through journaling were far more likely to find reemployment. One of the greatest things is it becomes cathartic. Once you get it out of your head, out of yourself, onto that paper, it's out. And now you can free your brain to think about other things. Number 8, don't blame yourself. Self-blame is corrosive. Research on kids raised amid domestic violence, abuse, or maternal depression shows that self-blame can trigger or worsen depression. Attribution errors, blaming yourself for the bad things that happened to you, are probably the biggest reason people metabolize failure badly. Attribution has a potent effect on depression, and the more you blame yourself for your problems, the more depressed you will grow. And this, I like number 9 the best. It's part of one of our keys, and this is action. Failure is an opportunity to change course. Seize it. So that is our fabulous 9 ways to fail better. Up next right now, Jodine Speier is a relationship coach and an End It expert. She's also a recovering avoidant who lives and works in Los Angeles. Jodine has produced documentaries for National Geographic and worked on such shows as Joe Millionaire, Sheer Genius, and The Supreme Court of Comedy. Her writing will be featured in an upcoming St. Martin's Press book called Cassette from an Ex. She has successfully dumped hundreds of people, not always on her own behalf, but she is here today to help us break up with some of our financial woes. Jodine, welcome to the broadcast, Jodine.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. And what an incredible family you belong to. I just wanted to say that. It would have been interesting to see how all of you comedians grew up together, that's for sure.
Yes, it was challenging to get your voice heard. There were so many of us, but it was a great family to grow up in. But my dad, of course, would take all the credit if he was in the room right now, that he was the funniest and we all took after him.
Oh, absolutely. I could totally see that. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about your most recent book and share where people can find it. Of course, their links are on our website, and they're able to get it through Amazon.com from the radio show page. But how did you come about writing this book?
Well, you know, you just hit upon it when you introed me. I was a total avoidant. I did not like confrontation, so I would really hide and go out of my way to not deal with any awkward or uncomfortable conversation. But like many of you probably listening know, it's exhausting. No one likes to constantly hide or come up with excuses or come up with creative lies. And on the opposite end, you don't want to be the person that builds so much resentment that you lash out, because no one likes to yell at someone and no one likes to be yelled at. So it really was my search to find a book that would teach me how to kind of end relationships gracefully and respectfully that led me to write this book, because what I discovered was there wasn't anything out there. So if I didn't teach it to myself, I would really probably never learn how to do it. So I really just did this year journey and spoke to a lot of people and professionals and really mastered the art of the successful dump 'em.
Oh, well, that's great. And, you know, I have to say that I have several family members that I have referred to as the kings and queens of conflict avoidance. And I'm like, you're killing yourself not addressing this.
Exactly.
You know? And it just blows me away.
It is. And what's amazing is how many of us really do it. I mean, you actually sound like a very powerful woman. I was just listening to the few minutes in the intro, and I think your message is really, really great. So many people need that, but so many people, because they don't have that in their life, confrontation is paralyzing. And it's really important that people learn, and that's what Dumpum is about, to really speak up and empower yourself and get your message out there. And it's not as difficult as people think it is. The truth is we've really never been told how to end relationships. We're kind of, this culture talks about, we buy books and we hear messages about dumping your boyfriend or girlfriend, but really who explains to us how to end those other relationships in your life? So I think it's really just, as a society, we just have never learned how to do it. So we have to learn again, and so we really have to relearn the way we exit relationships.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My husband and I were out to dinner with our neighbors, and she was, you know, and I was thinking of you the whole time she's sharing this story about how ridiculous it had become that her hairdresser, you know, of just a few years, it, like, had, you know, become accustomed to, like, a 40 or 50% tip. And she just thought it was getting kind of, you know, unrealistic. She's like, if you want to make more money, you either need to cut more hair and create more income, create other people making income like opening your own salon, or get another job. But this is what haircuts cost. This is what people tip. Don't try to rape me because you're not doing anything different than any other skilled professional. And so she just kind of, you know, she just stopped answering the phone. So she did the conflict avoidance thing. And I'm thinking, oh, I should have her on the show to talk to Jodeen. That would be great. you know, but I mean, especially if you've lost your job, if you're financially stuck, you know, you can't pay a 50% tip for a haircut, but you can't let your hair become unruly either. And so what do you do? And how are you tactful? You know, and the thing that I have noticed about conflict is it's never as bad as people think it's going to be. I mean, for the avoiders. And, you know, I've never, and I don't know where I got it from, but, you know, for the people that avoid things, you know, it's just, if you just cut right to the chase, the minute something happens and address it right away instead of letting it grow and build and fester, you know, it's never as big as you think it is, and people are probably just as scared about it because if you're feeling tension, chances are they are too. And if you don't find a way to connect and address that, you know, neuro-linguistic programming teaches us what you resist persists, and then it's not healthy for either party. And so I was so excited, you know, when your book gives people not just the empowerment, because anybody can motivate anybody, if you take an idiot and you motivate them, all you've got is a motivated idiot. People need tools. You know, there's so many people preaching financial advice and how use my way to get rich, and for the people that are self-starters that don't have negative programming and negative self-talk and self-sabotaging things, that's great. They'll go out and they'll make it successful. But if you ever notice when they're running the infomercials, they're the ones that always says their success is atypical. But how do you get people from point A to point B and give them the why behind it and then the strength? And so that's what I thought was so cool about your book. And I thought, with no seasonal exceptions is our key this week, where, you know, that's when we tend to, like, we're really good managing our money, but then where we blow it is special occasions or special events or holidays. It's when people tend to go overboard, and that can crush them for the year with the way some people go nuts. And so I thought, you know, you need to break up with the friends that you feel so obligated to, or, you know, as we'll talk about when we get in nuts and bolts more about, you know, if this person is giving you something only because they're expecting to get something from you, that's a relationship you need to reevaluate.
Absolutely.
And your book will give them the tools to dump that. So, you know, with this being, you know, no seasonal exceptions, and it's also, this is also kind of coincides with one of our other keys that we featured earlier in the season, which is take emotion out of the picture. You know, when people add excuses like, well, Bobby will never have another third birthday, and the Smiths gave us a present, you know, we have to respond in kind and justify someone's position by using the rules of etiquette is how I usually help people, you know, get out of that. But when it comes to overspending and overtipping or gift giving, when you truly don't have the means, what would you advise your readers to say to approach these people? How would you go about doing it?
Well, I don't think you should take the emotion out of a situation like ending a relationship. What I think you should take away or take out of, you should not have a charge going into ending a relationship. So if you have a charge and you're about to end this relationship, don't end it. Don't have that conversation. Really rehearse what it is that you're going to say to the other person ahead of time. In a situation like you just referred to with a financial strain being a part of it, that's almost one of the easiest ways to get out of a relationship because you can't really blame someone for saying, I love your haircuts, but right now financially I just can't afford the cost. And just try to make a point of keeping the door open. I talk about in Dump 'Em that you don't want to terminate a relationship without doing it kindly. And so part of being kind is to keep the door open. So in other words, if you want to go back to that hairdresser but just can't afford them right now, say just that. I think you've given great cuts. Financially right now this is a tough time. But I'd like to know that, and so I am going to go see another hairdresser that costs less, but I'd like to keep the door open so that in the future, if I want to come back, I know I can. So just kind of keep it positive. You don't have to just flat out avoid them or yell at them. Just be kind the way you deliver the message, and the way that you do that is really rehearsing what it is that you're going to say ahead of time. I think the mistake that people make, especially women, is we tend to over-talk. We think, okay, you know what, I'm going to end this relationship with my girlfriend today. I'll figure it out as I'm going. And that's a mistake because we tend to just don't stay on topic. We go off on tangents. So really be concise, and I think you hit upon this earlier, cut to the chase. Get to that point and exit the conversation in the nicest way possible. So it's really rehearsing, giving a warning ahead of time if you can, like for the toxic friend that you mentioned, because no one wants a toxic friend. We need relationships to help build us up and not bring us down. So if someone has an expectation, which you hit upon, that's not a great relationship to have in your life. If you can give them a heads up and let them know or some type of warning that you've thought about your friendship and that you feel that everything that person does for you, there's an expectation, let them know that that's not something that you want in a friendship. And if that dynamic doesn't change, you're going to end the relationship. So you've given them a warning. Chances are they're not going to change because they might not get it, but it makes it easier for when you actually do dump them, you can refer back to that warning and say, I mentioned this to you, and unfortunately because things haven't changed and this is an uncomfortable conversation to have, I am going to end the friendship. And just that's really concise. It's very kind of clean. Now, if the person wants to have a response and say something to you, allow them to be heard, because we all really want to be heard and seen. So hear them out completely, just don't react to them. In other words, don't yell at them, listen to them, say certain things like, I'm sorry that I hurt you, or something kind in response to them, but end the relationship if that's what you've decided to do. Don't have a reaction to it, because this is the time that you're ending that relationship, not continuing it. And I think a big mistake that people make is they start backpedaling and they start saying, oh, okay, well, maybe you're right and maybe I was speaking too prematurely. Don't do that. Really rehearse and make it crystal clear what it is that you want to have come from that relationship.
That's great advice. And just to give you a perspective that you don't have, take emotion out of the picture is not when it comes to dealing with people. It's the relationship people have with their money because they work so hard for it. So they create entitlement mentalities. So that's what that key is about okay. Associating your emotion. Like if you were managing another company's budgeting, you could do it and you wouldn't think anything about cutting this much out of this budget and reallocating those assets somewhere else. And that key came from my father used to always tell me, you know, I can balance a multi-million dollar budget at the office, but because I'm so amped up about the money I made, I can't balance my checkbook. And so that's where that key comes from. So it's not about not being emotionally responsive to people. It's about dissociating emotions when you need to make those tough decisions about your money.
Got it.
So I just kind of wanted to clarify that because I didn't know if that would change your position at all or not. But
thank you for clarifying. Yeah, you're right.
Because, you know, people, I mean, there's so much negativity in life and so many other destructive relationships that we can't control and can't dump that we really have to focus and really decide, you know, what I think about, I bring about. And so I have to surround myself with quality relationships and successful people so I can emulate their value system, their habits, their behaviors, and how they respond to things. And if you're surrounded with these people that just suck the life out of you and the money out of you, especially when you can't afford it, you know, is going to make your life exponentially worse. And if you're thinking about how do I avoid this person, you're not thinking about how can I bring about financial independence and happiness in my life. If we're focused on these people that you know, the hairdresser that expects a 50% tip after she's just charged us $100 for a haircut. And in Arizona, that's a pretty expensive haircut based on our cost of living here. It might not be in some of the other major metropolitan cities. But so to spend $150 on a haircut in Arizona is kind of a big deal. And if you've, you know, been canned from your job, there's not much you can do about it because you don't have another 150 coming in yet.
Yeah.
So you got to be able to eliminate or reduce that negative association and that avoidance, because that's just going to fester. And it's like, you know, cancer. Once it gets in, it just starts to spread if it gets a chance to take a stranglehold. And you just kind of cut it out.
Absolutely.
And so many people, you know, just do the conflict avoidance thing, and they run, and then they lie, and then they got to think about what they lie, and then they got to remember their lie, and oh, and it just becomes a negative downward spiral.
Indeed.
So,
and
you know,
another part of this is that people that I spoke to writing when I wrote Dump 'Em, they were saying, you know what, it's better if you don't say something because then you don't really hurt the other person's feelings. But what's bad about that is, well, you're hurting your own feelings by not empowering yourself and speaking up. And it's also not kind or fair to the other person, especially in the case of a friendship. If you're friends with someone and then just disappear on them and stop calling them back, chances are they're going to continue to call you. And it's not nice for the other person to think, wait, what did I do wrong? Tell them what they did wrong. Give them something, because people don't want to go through life always wondering, whatever happened to my friend so-and-so. That's way more unkind than trying to spare them of their feelings that will take 2 minutes to have that conversation. So it really is so important for all the things that you just mentioned about surrounding yourself with positive people, but just you want to do the right thing, the kind thing, the respectful thing, and doing that is speaking up and letting the other person know what they did wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, that relief that you experience is so tremendous when you have an opportunity to do that. And, you know, on the other flip side of it, if you don't tell somebody what you're thinking or feeling about them, they're going to have a false sense of what your relationship is. And
exactly.
So now they're living a lie, you're living a lie. And I love Letitia Baldridge. I used to write etiquette for a long time, and I used to, you know, guest appear on a lot of, I don't know, dating shows. I seem to do a lot of guest appearances on. And people would always ask me, well, you know, if you don't want to date somebody, you know, what do you say? You know, because I would just rather say, oh, I just can't do it, or, you know, it's, you know, I don't have the time, or I'm really busy right now, or something. And that gives somebody a false impression that you're interested in them, but it's a logistical issue. And if you're truly not interested in someone, you just got to speak up and say so. And if you have a problem with someone, especially like in today's world with the economy all topsy-turvy, those that do have jobs are hanging on for dear life. Those who are professionals that depend on clientele are seeing their clientele decrease, like, for example, hairdressers, and they're seeing their tips decrease. And then there's the other side of the coin where the people just can't afford to do that, but nobody's communicating. So you've got, you know, the hairdresser that keeps calling you to try to reschedule because she knows your ends are splitting, and you're avoiding them. You're not calling her back. You're not telling her what the deal is. I mean, it's just, I just think it eliminates so much garbage if you can just be direct. You don't, being direct doesn't mean being insensitive.
100%, and being, you know, people assume that dump them is about being confrontational, and I think confrontational has a bad rap. It's not necessarily a negative word. It's just speaking up. It's the you know, what you have to think about is how much do you want to say? Like, I don't think you actually have to tell, if you're breaking up, let's say, with a friend, you don't have to go through a laundry list. Get to the, like, heart of the issue and say that. You don't have to really, it's not the time to just tear them a new one. It's to just kind of get something off your chest. You don't have to go through, let's just be sensitive the way you say it. And to go back to the people that are afraid to do this, they're afraid because they don't know how, but once they learn a few simple steps, which Dump Them talks about, it gets easier once you put it into practice. Like anything in life, once we do it a few times, it gets easier. And I think there's a strong message in Dump Them that will teach you just that. Well, you put them in place, you'll practice it, and then it gets easier, and then suddenly you're the person that knows how to speak up, and you're not that avoidant person anymore, which is the goal in life.
Yes, and so on that note, you know, in a scenario where you have people experiencing a lot of emotion, and one of them is the conflict avoidant, and they're, it's consuming their life in a very negative way, how do you lay the foundation to empower this person to do the dumper deed? What would you say you would do first, second, third, fourth, and why? How do you start somebody down that process to make the dump?
Well, it depends on what relationship they're ending. So give me an example of someone, like a friend, should we say, or what do you? Because it depends, I think, on what type of breakup. But for example, dumping a family member or a best friend is much heavier than dumping a hairdresser or a doctor. So mm-hmm. It would depend. I would go through steps depending on what type of breakup it is, if it's professional, if it's personal.
So I'll give you a great one, and I know that there are listeners out there that are experiencing this very situation. They are a relative. It's a family. You know, there are family members that that are a financial drain. They're adults. They're fully capable of employment. They're creative or talented, but they choose not to work, or they've created this. You had a temporary employment situation where you had them do some stuff, and then that temporary thing has kind of drug on for years now, and you're to the point where this person is now, this relative, is taking advantage of you. They're doing less and less work, and are, you know, wanting the same or more money for less results, and because you've got this familial tie and you just don't want to deal, you know, with the consequences of what's going on, but it's a big financial drain on you because you're not in the same financial position you were when you first employed them. How do you dump that person?
Wow, yeah, that's a heavy one. The family, to me, was the heaviest chapter to write. But again, you know, family, it's all about boundaries and defining and setting your own personal boundaries and not expecting your family to necessarily get them. So I think oftentimes we think that our mother or our sister should know that it's not okay to keep coming back and asking me for money. But boundaries are really for you to set and for you to keep. So you have to kind of assume that your family member is going to keep asking for more money or more employment, and it's up to you to keep that boundary clear. So in a situation where someone's asking for money, let's say, maybe give them one last check and make it crystal clear, like, this is your boundary. This is the last check that you will write to them that's been draining for you emotionally and financially, and that you've thought about it, and this is it. This is your boundary that you're setting, and this is the last time. And make it really clear that they cannot come back to you. And if they want to have a conversation, well, why are you doing this? You can explain to them if you wish, but it's been too many times. But try to give them some type of heads up or some type of warning that this is the last time I'm going to do this. And if it becomes so unbearable or unhealthy, I suggest that you dump that family member. Now, it doesn't have to be a permanent dump. It can be a temporary one. It can be like 1 week, 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, whatever it is. But when you dump your family member, you have to tell them why you're doing it and how long you want to do it. I think the mistake that many of us make is that we hang up, we're so emotionally charged with our family members that we tend to resent, lash out, hang up on them, and not tell them why we're doing what we're doing. And it's important that you say, this is what's going on for me, I'm feeling this way, or drained by you, whatever your terminology is with that family member. But tell them why you're ending the relationship. Tell them what you want to have happen, because in the case of a family, you tend to run into them, whether they be family get-togethers, weddings, graduations, what have you. Go over exactly what you want to have happen when you see them. So if you have, let's say, a wedding to go to, do you want to say hi to them if you guys have kind of, if you're dumping that person, or would you prefer not to even acknowledge them? Get it all out on paper and explain to them how you foresee your temporary or permanent dump them, break. So it's really just about speaking up for what you want to have your needs being met. But you don't have to try to, I think the mistake that people make is they want to judge or blame the other family member, and it's really not your place to do that. It's keeping your boundaries and honoring your boundaries, but not lashing out at the family member for their mistakes. It's their journey. It's their path to learn what they need to learn. It's not up to you to teach them.
Oh, that is such great advice. Oh, wow. That left me feeling really good, because now I can communicate that, because that's been the toughest one that I've been trying to help someone try to overcome, and it's just been a difficult path for sure. Jodine, I know you have to run, but how can people get your fabulous books and tools to be successful at dumping?
Like you had suggested, go on Amazon. I also have a website, www.dumpemthebook.com, and I think there's links to Amazon and Borders and Barnes & Noble, so they can buy it through my website and check out other things that I'm doing and other appearances. And if anyone wants to write to me, there's a section on my website for questions, so I'm happy to answer any questions from any of your viewers. Listeners.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming on the show, and much success with your future endeavors, although you are surrounded by quite a family of successful people, so I'm sure it's guaranteed. Anyway, you take care. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. And those of you that are staying with us, there's plenty more to come on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back after this.
A beloved weatherman named Larry Chovaka, a news reporter named Fifi Furferfester, a crazy homeless guy named Leonard, and an octopus-riding hermit named Gus. Read all about it in Laborless Magazine, the fictional lifestyle magazine from the town of Laborless, where everyone worships their weatherman and believes that they're super cool and way better than you. Laborless Magazine, available at Socially Acceptable.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
If I were a rich man, diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-dum, all day long.
I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a busy, busy, rich, idle, 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 idle man, I'd build a big tall house with rooms by the dozen, right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with real wooden floors below. There could be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down, and one more leading nowhere just for show. I fill my yard with chicks.
Welcome back to the broadcast. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your hostess with the financial mostest on this fabulous money, May 30th, the last day. I'm so sad of our money May. But that just brings us to our next set of fun tools we have in store for you in the upcoming months for summer. So we've got a neat program. If you are not following us on Twitter, let me just tell you, Alyssa, our social media manager, is tweeting like crazy for the show, giving you little snippets to entice you to continue to listen. But if you can't, you can still pick up these tweets. Just follow us at Unlock Your Wealth, and it's Unlock YR Wealth. We had to drop the OU because they limited us character-wise. But yes, if you just follow us at Unlock YR Wealth, you too can be a part of the fabulous Money May campaign we did with lots of quotes and specific tools to help you become financially independent. Back to minutes on your money. After failing better in 9 different ways, I totally liked that article. I want to also talk to you about money in general. And Psychology Today, again, had a really great article about money. And they talk about the money stressors and what we can do to overcome and conquer our money worries. Money is laden with subjective associations that have accrued over decades, according to the author, typically originating in the childhood mind, trying to make primitive sense of the world and operating thereafter below the level of conscious awareness. As you know, in our first key, when we do our acceptance and affirmation, we're trying to overcome those negative ones that have been installed. Klontz, the author, calls these money scripts assumptions about how things are when it comes to money. When something exists on a belief level, ladies and gentlemen, it's really tough to change that. And unless you question and challenge that belief, it's difficult to change those. So that's why we use NLP techniques and the affirmation process and our Journal for Success techniques to successfully alter our perception of money. Some of the common scripts, Mr. Klontz goes on to say, is that there will always be enough, or there will never be enough, or the fat cat will get away clean and leave you holding the bag, or hard work always pays off. Do some of these sound familiar? Money scripts can also stand in for complex feelings that people are either unaware of or unwilling to acknowledge. Klontz's parents, for example, raised to distrust outsiders and stick together as a clan, may have resented his uncle's independence. They may have felt that he abandoned them by leaving Ohio, and in their rejection of his lifestyle, they sought to return the slight. Recognizing and expressing these feelings may have required a degree of insight and honesty that was beyond them. So instead, they condemned him for his money. Even in the best of times, money scripts rarely lead to realistic or healthy appraisals of financial circumstances. Too often, they present a rigid vision that leads to blaming others for one's financial problems or denying that one has problems at all. Again, this goes back to our first key of acceptance and affirmation. And until we can take responsibility for what we've done, no matter how much finger pointing there is, and as always, when you point a finger, you've got three pointing back at you, just the way it is. So you have to pay attention to that. But negative scripts can be fatalistic, fostering a sense of helplessness and victimization. What's the use of poor old me trying if the fat cat always gets it all? Positive ones can be dangerously simplistic or naive. If they say hard work always pays off and I get into trouble, then all I have to do is work harder, when in fact it may be time to switch my strategies. Periods of economic instability involving sudden gain or loss invariably change money scripts. I'll give you a perfect example of this. There are statistics that show when people win the lottery, they are either broke or dead within a year because they have an idea of how money should be, and these beliefs that they've held entrench them into ineffective decision-making, and they constantly repeat these patterns that they have already instilled inside themselves, and they're not actively working to change them because the game plan changed. When the amount of money changes, the game plan needs to change. But these people haven't done that. So then all one's implicit beliefs about money can then give rise to feelings of panic, anger, and betrayal, which are very primitive feelings related to one's upbringing concerning money and the stories around money that have been absorbed unconsciously. Money scripts also have a cultural component. In many cultures, wealth has signified happiness, status, belonging, wisdom, peace of mind, sex appeal, and even spiritual superiority. And it's just the opposite of what it meant to Kant. They felt the more materially blessed you are, the more blessable you must be. So lack of money, which is the opposite. So, you know, just because one thing is true doesn't mean the opposite of true. But here, they extrapolated the opposite. Lack of money, on the other hand, has been associated with the miserable, downtrodden, outcast, foolish, anxious, undesirable, and cursed. And so instead of individual performance being the baseline, currency then becomes the idyllic representation of character for them. And Americans favor an idealized script that economic privilege goes to the clever and industrious and the deserving. And we even rely on money to tell us how to value objects and experiences, says Jacob Needleman, professor of philosophy at San Francisco State University and the author of Money and the Meaning of Life. It has become our index of reality, substituting for a more interior valuation based on personal reflection. He says, whether you're a billionaire or a pauper, your sense of how to judge whether something is important or real or serious has to do with how much it costs. And that's why I say free is not a four-letter word in the typical sense that we think, because there is value in things, and money is not always a great indicator of true value. And he identifies this in his book. I thought that was pretty exciting. The article goes on to say, yet for most of us, our subjective associations with money remain hidden, unspoken, and obscure, even to ourselves. Indeed, money has become on some level an unspeakable topic in a culture where sex is recreational and potty humor epidemic. Money remains the final taboo, says psychologist Deborah Price of the Money Coaching Institute of Petaluma, California. It carries such a burden of secret hopes and fears that the mere mention of it becomes fraught with tension. People struggle to have frank discussions about earning, spending, and saving, even in their most intimate relationships. Isn't that interesting? Gee, I wonder why. marriages have such a tough time surviving when it comes to financial woes for the family. Very interesting. It's not safe to talk about money in most families, not even in most marriages, because we've linked money with our selfhood as well as our basic survival. So such discussions can leave us feeling acutely vulnerable. And, you know, therapists will tell you that people will lie only about money when it comes to their marriages, and how they don't feel safe talking about money in their private counseling sessions either. You know, and if you're going to invest the time to go to a therapist, you might as well get your money's worth by telling them everything. Because if they don't know it all, they're not going to be able to assess it properly, because there might be one or two key factors that you're leaving out that would materially alter their answer. And you may be secretly sabotaging things so you get the answer you want, not the one that you really need to hear. So we're burdened with fiscal beliefs that aren't publicly aired or even privately acknowledged. And it's such a shame, because Klontz can attest, unconscious beliefs control our behavior without being accessible to change. This is the foundation of the keys to riches, because it's about our perceptions and our perspectives about money that fuel our decisions and our reactions, our behavior patterns. An affluent couple who married expecting that the husband would provide the primary income found that their marriage was threatened after decades of dutiful breadwinning. He got laid off and couldn't find another job. And even though they were financially safe, she paid the bills on her salary, the wife felt that that unspoken covenant had been breached. He was supposed to be the one, not me. And her faith in her husband was shaken. The worst part, she confides, is that discovering how much she relied on him emotionally to be the moneymaker and how angry she felt when he wasn't. It's amazing, too, because people, the mere thought of having less money makes people less likely to help a friend in need, donate to charity, or even associate with other people. They become recluses because, you know, well, I can't go out and spend time with my friends because I don't have any money. And let me tell you, I have a personal family member that I have grown up with that has that attitude. And, you know, money is a tool. It's not a goal. It doesn't define you. It's simply a tool. And if you look at it objectively in the correct light, it can do many wondrous things for you. Or if your perceptions internalize money and money becomes about you, it can enslave you for a lifetime. So this article goes on to share calm counsel for a cash crisis. So here's some tips. Household budgeters, like investors, make the best decisions when they employ deliberative analysis. So here's how to get your money's worth out of a financial free fall. Meditate, breathe deeply, or get out the yoga mat. I love this one. These times call upon people to exert a certain level of self-soothing to be peaceful around their not-so-peaceful emotions, says Ed Jacobson. Even in the best of times, it's wise to cultivate emotional detachment from investments and financial goals. Isn't that interesting? Yes. Take emotion out of the picture. Here we have yet another key rising again. If you can't, delegate decisions to a family member or a professional who can be more objective. Like we were sharing with Jody, if we can't dissociate our emotions from making effective decisions with our money, then we need to employ one of our other keys. And knowledge is power. Not knowing is powerful. If you know you can't do this, if you're weak, you need to delegate that to someone else who can do it. Now, the second one is stay grounded in the reality of your finances. It's natural to restrain on your fears or finances are a natural restraint on your fears. But, you know, you got to be realistic, and you've got to be vigilant as well. And in order to do that, you've got to have a plan. And, you know, because I break the budget, as we did last week, this says keep a budget, but have a plan. Make a spreadsheet with income, expenses, and savings. Prioritize your expenses and educate yourself about finance and debt. Here we go, yet another key. Become a voracious reader. Be objective with the information and know that it helps fiscally traumatized people avoid blaming, denial, and paralysis that often accompanies a sudden decline in fortune. And the thing that kills us about all of this is that the lack of knowledge and understanding is what creates the fear, and knowing deletes it. So if we know where we are, we're good. And all we've got to do is educate ourselves. It's one of the keys. And when we're there, we're golden. And we can create somewhat of a thicker skin and be more effective about decision making, or when crisis events occur, like the loss of an income-producing spouse or the sudden care of an indigent parent gets foisted upon you, you can figure out how to adjust and not react so emotionally to it. I like this next one. Consider which expenditures will bring true fulfillment. People spend money on the wrong things, believing mistakenly that a faster car or a bigger diamond will bring happiness. I always like to say, money can't buy you happiness, but you can be sad and a better part of town. It's hard, you know, because when everybody else does it, it just puts you right back where you started, but now you're out the cash for whatever that item is. The trick is to shift your resources from domains where extra spending doesn't help to domains where it does, like making your money work for you. And finally, the last bit of calm counsel for a cash crisis, find a buddy. Reach out. Remember that you're not facing a crisis by yourself. We're all a part of this economic crisis. And people feel alone with this money thing. And you don't have to. The guy next door is probably going through the same thing. And this could be a new opportunity for the two of you to bond. Be careful, though, because you don't want to commiserate too long, because that could further perpetuate your depression. You, again, want to be surrounding yourself with successful people so you can emulate them and their behavior patterns and choices become yours. Well, I've got 10 ways to slash your grocery bill, but I think we'll save that for next week, because I'd like to get into the investor's edge, because we have a couple of fabulous guests that I'm so excited to bring you today. Dr. Dennis Cavier and Alan Lesate. Hopefully I didn't mess their names up too much. I didn't have an opportunity to achieve the appropriate pronunciation prior. But they are the authors of The ABCs of Making Money, a speaker, trainer, consultant who has made a career out of helping his clients and audiences become financially successful. Dr. Cavier, a former personal and corporate lender with two of North America's largest banks and a financial consultant to his clients around the world, he has uncovered the traits shared by America's wealthiest people. Alan, our other guest, his co-author, began his career as a researcher and writer with separate degrees in psychology, sociology, and English literature. He is a strategic planning consultant specializing in turnaround solutions for businesses and individuals. Some of the A-list companies that Alan's worked with include Molson Breweries, ooh, very tasty, Standard Broadcasting, Nuevo Mundo Broadcasting, and Caroni Rum Trinidad. A customer service expert, he has consulted and trained for many 4- and 5-star hotels, including the world leader in luxury hotels, Sandals International. And how exciting, because we all have related and similar backgrounds, and we've both brought forward tools to become financially independent. So I'd love to welcome both Dr. Cavier and Alan Lissay to the show. Welcome to the broadcast, gentlemen.
Well, great to be here, Heather. Wonderful to share some thoughts with your listeners today.
I'm so excited. I love to surround myself with other like-minded individuals. And, you know, my 13th key in my Keys to Riches is become a voracious reader. And while I have a fairly extensive background similar to the good doctors, I was a stockbroker, investment advisor, then was a mortgage banker and a lender, and then as now I'm currently a real estate broker. You know, even though I have all of that experience, I know one thing. I don't know it all. And I encourage and become a voracious reader to pick up other people's tools and see what they have to say. You don't have to buy into everything, but I always go into every new book or financial tool with the goal of coming out with one new tool for my toolbox that I didn't have previously. And I just like the way you created your ABCs of investing. How did the two of you come up with this?
Well, Heather, Alan speaking here. It's great to be with you today. We're, as you mentioned in our bios, we are both consultants, and we consult big companies, Fortune 500 companies, smaller companies, and individuals. And we've been doing that. Dennis has been doing it for about 20 years. I've been doing it for about 15 years. We've been doing it together for about 13 years. And we started noticing certain patterns amongst companies and individuals that we, you know, as a species, we tend to overcomplicate things for whatever reason. And what we would end up doing when we were working with companies or individuals is mostly strip back and go back to the basics, go back to the essentials of what the business was all about or what the person's goals were. And when you get back to that, it's you find the basics and then you build from there, because we've probably muddied it up with a lot of complications. And that's sort of part of where the ABCs came, or how we came up with the ABCs. The other thing is that we, when we started seeing the consistencies, that a lot of people were, as I said, overcomplicating things, but also their attitudes were really out of line with what they hoped to achieve, both corporately and as individuals. And so what we did is we started interviewing all of these people that we knew, all these very successful entrepreneurs and millionaires and multimillionaires and even a couple of billionaires, and we wanted to find out what was consistent with all of these people. What sort of traits did they share that some of the people who were having challenges did not? And what we found is that their attitudes were hugely different. They were very, very positive, as opposed to a lot of people who, and you alluded to, I think it was in last week's program, or we were talking about people who just didn't really know what they were doing or where they were going, and they needed to clarify things. And a lot of people just don't believe that it can happen to them. They believe that getting ahead, being successful, getting wealthy is something that happens to other people, happens to people you read about in the newspaper, your neighbors, but not to you. And, you know, it's not that if you have a positive attitude, all of a sudden it's going to, you know, if you really believe that you're going to get a bicycle will appear for you. I mean, that's nonsense. You have to work for it. But if you don't have the right attitude, if you expect that it cannot happen to you, then it won't happen to you. So you have to adjust your attitude for success. That's one thing. And you also have to have goals. You have to know where you're going and how you're going to achieve them. So we designed the ABCs with that in mind. So A stands for attitude. And it doesn't matter if you know, we can tell you the steps, you know, to save money and how to get ahead. But if you don't have the right attitude, you're probably going to ignore it. You're going to go, well, you know, deep down,
you're so right.
Yeah, it's not going to happen to me. And when you say that you're a voracious reader, I applaud that. And we're also both voracious readers. But the difference is how many people actually enact what they read. They read it, and then it goes and it sits on the night table. And so what we try to do is before we even talk about any kind of saving strategies, investment strategies, wealth creating strategies, we talk about attitude for the first two chapters in the what we refer to as the adult book to distinguish it against from the teen book that we wrote. And we just talk about attitude first, because if you've got the wrong attitude, you'll never be successful. So knowing all of the tips, the investment tips, probably won't help you, because you won't enact it. You won't get organized to do it. You got to have the right attitude. You got to know where you're going, and you got to know why you're doing it, why you're going there, before you're going to ever be successful. And that's what we're trying to do. Then the B section is all about the behaviors. These are the steps that you want to avoid if you're going to become wealthy. And here are the things that you want to do if you want to become wealthy. And then the C section is all about creativity. So that if you if you're not happy just investing and getting a 7-10% annual return on your investment portfolio, you really want to supercharge that, then you've got to have your own business pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And we go through the steps of being an entrepreneur. Those are the three steps, the A's, the B's, and the C's. And we thought we're going to make it so simple that anybody can do it. And you say educate yourself, and you're absolutely 100% correct on that. You've got to educate yourself, but you've got to make it we believe that we had to make it simple enough so that everybody could understand it and go out and enact the information that they received. And if they do, we know that they'll be successful. That's why we offered probably the first 100% guarantee money back refund. If you do not earn 100 times the price of the book, we'll give you your money back in the first year, because we know that if you apply the principles, they're very simple, you can be wealthy.
Yeah, I love that about that. When I was on your website, I thought that was really cool. And for listeners, their website's on our page, but it's also www.abcguys.com. And, you can't put the C before the A or B. And I do the same thing with my Keys to Riches program, is the first thing is we talk about our mindset, and we work to change that, to change our behavior patterns and our internal reactions. And I'm a neuro-linguistic programming practitioner, and so I employ NLP techniques throughout my Keys to Riches, and it's less on the money and more on the attitudes and the behaviors. And I open my show with saying we are here to help give tools to people so they can manage their finances and attitudes. And, without the right perspective and a shift in how we look at money and ourselves, we're, never going to get there. And I was sharing with the previous guest, we were talking, and the segment you're thinking about is Dreams with Deadlines. That's where we do our goal setting and we plan backwards. So we find out where we want to end up, and then we figure out how we want to get there, and we reduce it to the ridiculous so it becomes like, I can get to be a millionaire on a dollar a day. Wow, I had no idea. And then when people see that, they're like, oh, okay. So maybe it's not that inescapable for me to become a millionaire if I can do it on a dollar. So, but I was sharing with the previous guest when we were talking about attitudes and behaviors, we've got to be able to position ourselves for success. And it's all about our mindset. And I like that you start the ABCs with attitudes first, because I wholeheartedly agree with you. What is your current opinion of the marketplace? Let's step back and go macro for a minute and talk about you know, our economy, you know, I've had people saying it's great. I've had people saying it's not great on the show. What's your guys' opinion?
Well, it's really, it's a mixed bag of tricks. I mean, we seldom see the truth, unfortunately, with most of the mass market media. Invariably what happens is they understand that negative news, for whatever reason, and it's sort of a sad commentary, I guess, in our society, but negative news seems to sell more. It gets more eyeballs.
If it leads, it leads.
Exactly. So what happens is we're getting things that are a little disproportional. The reality is there's a number of positive indicators, but there's a number of negative indicators right now. The trend appears to be, if you look at the backwards-looking indicators, the things that are reporting the past, the recent past, that seems to be more disproportionately on the negative side. When you look at the future-oriented indicators, those are starting to become more favorable. We're certainly not out of the woods. You know, whenever you're in a trough and you're coming out of it, there is good news, there's bad news, and you have to have a lot of good news before you really get that consumer excessive optimism happening, as so typical of these curves. I think what's more important than the economy, I think it's helpful to understand the economy, but I think we have to look at ourselves, and this goes back to, you know, if you go back to the title of our book, The ABCs of Making Money, Painless Strategies for Ordinary People to Create Extraordinary Wealth. And just to tie into the answer of this question and going back to what Alan was covering a couple minutes earlier, when we wrote the book, part of the exercise was to go out and, Alan, as Alan said, was to interview hundreds and hundreds of self-made millionaires. But one of the things we were very concerned about is we had this criteria of who we wanted to interview. These are not people that had inherited money. These were not people that had a couple of penny stocks that went crazy. These are folks with very average and ordinary backgrounds. They didn't win the money, and they also had survived at least one economic downturn and were still financially independent. So these are folks that we felt we could tap in and get some of their wisdom. And also going back to the common sense perspective of the book, that we wanted to write about ordinary people. So these stories are exceedingly inspirational, but they're also so identifiable by our audience. And one of the things that I like about the positioning of the show, to answer the question that you just asked, was the no excuses. And to our way of thinking is, all of these people that we interviewed did not allow the economy to become an excuse not to win, not to be successful. In fact, you can look at the word average, and average is very interesting because they can talk about, on average, a particular sector may be down, say, 30%. So that's alarming. People are freaking out. But if you look at what makes an average, in order for, say, an automotive sector to be, the automotive sector to be down, say, 30%, that means some poor players are down 60 to 70%, yet others may only be up 5%. And in today's market, you've got Audi, you've got Volkswagen, for example, that are actually with net increase in their sales. You've got Kia Motors, net increase in sales, but of course people aren't telling that story in the media. So on average, some companies are doing better than average, and some are doing much worse. Here's the thing about averages. If you want to be average, basically means you are the best of the worst of the worst of the best.
So I like that. I've never heard that.
Understand. Here's another way. This is an interesting way to look at average. Go home, take off your shoes and your socks, go into your kitchen, put one of your feet into the freezer, and put the other foot into the oven. On average, you're comfortable. I mean, that's how silly averages are when you're talking about finances. As we said earlier, it behooves the average individual to understand what's happening out there, see the big picture, but don't allow the economy to control yourself. Consciously choose to be better than average. In other words, choose to control your own economy. And I think that's a more important focus point, because that's something that you have some influence over.
Dennis is absolutely right on there, Heather. I believe that wholeheartedly, that this is people see this as devastation, the economy's in ruins. We see it as an opportunity. This is a time that maybe you just want to put your money on the sideline for the time being and invest, put all of your focus, put your investment into yourself. You know, because if you invest in yourself, and by that I mean educating yourself, maybe taking courses, making yourself better in some way or other, you're going to bulletproof yourself from a layoff if you're an employee of a company. The more highly trained you are, the less likely they are to let you go. If the company does go out of business, is a victim of the recession, it's going to be easier for you to get hired by another company. And also, you might start to think, well, you know, now's the time. I've always been passionate about wine or something like that, and it's always been my passion. You know, now I'm going to start a magazine about wine, or I'm going to start importing wine, or whatever business it is that you're passionate about. And so you might put the time and energy right now, instead of burying your head, is the commodity exchange the place that I ought to be right now? You know, maybe it's China. Maybe that's where I ought to have my money. You can make yourself crazy doing that. And unless you're really, you know, unless you're spending, 20 hours a day researching the markets, you're as likely as not to make the wrong guess. Because
even the most sophisticated professionals
Absolutely.
Don't spend that much time. How are we, as general people that are, ditch diggers and telephone repairmen and hairdressers and checkout girls and people that work, you know, just ordinary people, aren't even going to be able to grasp that kind of stuff if the professionals that are managing money aren't?
Precisely. So the thing that you can manage is yourself. The thing you can't manage is whether China goes up or down and whether Russia goes up or down and whether the price of oil goes up or down or copper or whatever. You can't control that, and nobody can predict it. The people who spend their lives doing it and been doing it for 20 years are making the wrong bets on everything from currencies to oil. Everybody called oil wrong. Everybody called the currencies wrong. They figure that the dollar is the safe haven in a time of crisis, and now it's getting battered. Everybody's gotten it wrong. So, rather than try and do it yourself, try and control your own life. That's what you can do. You can improve yourself if you're an employee and make yourself better, more employable, more employer friendly. Or you start your own business that can really help you take off, because that again you can control. If you, again, going back to say you want to be a wine distributor for your state, well, you can do that research. You can go out and you can find out that information. What does it take to do the importation? What licenses do you need? What taxes have to be paid? And what's going to cost you to go around to the various outlets to do that, to set up your business.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see whether you have the time or the money to finance that, or how much you're going to need. That's controllable. What goes on in China or Russia is not controllable.
Agreed. And again, it's like, it's what are you focusing on? And if people, are worried about, well, what's China going to do, or, Persia, and, where are we, and get caught up in things that don't have a direct effect on their daily life, but yet they get consumed with that because somehow it's better than addressing their finances.
Right.
It's just kind of, it's silly to me. And, we've really got to, at least one of the things I think that's come out of what's going on in today's marketplace is the economy has made people pay attention to their personal finances. We see that people are using cash and debit cards more than charging, and we're actually starting to see the recession of that negative savings rate here in our country that we've had for so long. And so those are some good things, I guess, about paying attention to news as a whole. But you've got to figure out, what does that mean to me? And if you can't make a connect to the dots, what does that mean to me? Then it's not something you should be worrying about.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. This is the perfect time where everybody is talking about the economy. Now I don't have to keep up with the Joneses. It's not You know, so many people had to have the Gucci handbag, or they had to have the new Prius, or they had to have the new something or other. But now you don't really need to. It's not a matter of, oh, well, you're not acceptable if you don't have that particular logo or the latest car or the latest iPhone or whatever it is. It's not mm-hmm. such a shame anymore. It can be a really smart thing because you can, you know, I think it's forcing a lot of people to look at their own personal economy and go, do I really need that? You know, I could eat at home more often. I could cook and it would be healthier. I'd save money. There'd be less obesity in the country, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, reexamining everybody's personal economy and doing a budget. I mean, we've got what we think is the world's easiest budget in both of our books, because it's not, you know, we didn't want a 15-page banker's brochure that you had to fill out in great excruciating detail. We wanted to make it really, really simple so that anybody could do it and figure out where they are and then figure out where they can cut back easily, and then they can turn their finances around. Because that's mm-hmm. where it starts.
Absolutely. And, you know, you got to – one of our keys in the Keys to Riches is you've got to take action and make assessment. Because then anybody can say, oh, well, you need to go on a budget, and so people make this budget, and it's not realistic based on their family's needs.
Right.
You know, and so we always assess our current spending, and I'm not a budgeter. We break the budget and we create a healthy savings and spending plan, because I liken budgeting and dieting to the same thing as something we go on to and off of. And so it's easier, you know, with my system. That's how we do it. But it's got to be simple. It's got to be something that somebody can incorporate, and they got to know where they are in order to be able to determine where what path to take to get where they want to go. And so many people just don't have any clue. And, you know, I just think about when you were talking about Keeping Up with the Joneses and James Scurlock's documentary on Maxed Out. And if you walked into, you know, Ferragamo and they said, well, these shoes are $300 today, but next week they're going to be $310, and then next month they're going to be $320. And even though you paid the $300 today, I'm still going to you have to pay me $300 next week, and then you have to pay me $350. You know, next month, people wouldn't buy it that way, but that's what credit cards do to people.
Right.
And they just don't see it. And I loved his documentary, the way he pointed that out. I just thought that was the funniest thing. But, you know, people are only concerned because we've become this consumption, instant gratification society, that that's where we have to be.
Exactly. When we get over that, we'll be a lot healthier.
Well,
yeah.
Goes back to the key analysis. When you really want to drill it down, I mean, you know, we work in 45 countries, and we coach folks, and we do speeches and all this kind of stuff, and invariably what people are asking us, Heather, is this. You know, how do I get out of debt? How can I have a successful business? How can I do this and do that? And these are great questions, but we like to offer a better question, a more important question, and that is why. Why should you even care about these things? Because invariably, we have to often make some changes in our life. And people are change adverse oftentimes. They don't want to grow out of their comfort zones and all this sort of thing. So what we do is we ask folks, well, why is it that you even want to know how to do something? And if you can't understand at some sort of core level of why you want to do something, of how it affects your life and what your life would look like if you were to change some of your attitudes and behaviors, then you're not likely to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things is we often
it's a phenomenal question.
Is let's look at why. Let's have a clear understanding of why. Are you sick and tired of being stressed out about finances? Are you concerned about the lack of sleep? You look at one of the single causes of strife between life partners and marriages is worries about finances. Are you affecting your health negatively because you're so stressed out that you might be the next one to be let go at work, on and on and on. Well, one of the best ways to put more days to your life and more life to your days is to have clarity as to why you should care about such things. You know, watching American Idol could be a lot of fun, but that 1 or 2 hour investment of time, could you maybe invest a little bit of time and energy into coming up with a proper game plan for your family to change your financial destiny? And the sad news is that less than 3% of adult Americans will invest anywhere near half an hour or more per week for one of the most important things that we should be doing, and that's having our own financial plan.
You know, and those numbers are scary, you know, because so many people who don't plan, you know, are going to be expecting those coming up the system to take care of them, and we just know that that's not going to happen. You know, we're not going to have Social Security in my lifetime. I'll never collect a check because the system is so far gone and so many people did not plan. And I like, you know, my investment advisor and former co-host on a different radio show used to say, people don't plan to fail, they fail to plan.
Exactly. Yep.
And I think that that's an intuitive statement as to, you know, where we are economically speaking. And, oh, it's going up. They rode the wave. And I'm like, how could you, you know, but I guess if you're not looking for the signs, you're not going to see them. But, you know, we're getting close on time here. So what investments should people avoid?
Well, I think there's sort of a host of different investments that, generally speaking, again, there's exceptions to every rule, but as a rule, unless you're really into these things, you're an expert, you have access to very timely information, things like collectibles, the baseball cards, sports memorabilia, that type of stuff, precious metals, commodities, penny stocks, or even focusing on just buying single company shares. Unless you really know what you're doing, and even as we've all agreed on, you know, about 15 or so minutes ago, the experts that do this for a living, it's a hit and miss with them. So unless you're able to allocate a lot of time, energy, unless you're absolutely passionate about these subject areas and you're very knowledgeable, we would suggest avoid investing in those areas.
And invest in yourself, as we said before, and invest in your children. One thing that we read about 3 years, 4 years ago, whenever it was that teenagers were becoming the fastest growing demographic filing for bankruptcy. And we thought, how in the world is that possible? And nobody taught them. Because nobody taught them. It's a lack of education. 84% of schools have no education about finances in the high school system. So we wrote the book, The ABCs of Making Money for Teens, and it's done so well because parents are going, wow, my teenager, they can't grow up doing the same kind of going through the same kind of things that I'm going through. I don't want to pass that pain on to them. They've got to be better prepared. And so in investing that time, there was a woman out in Idaho who called me up, and she had gotten a copy of our first book and was using that because she had her own business and she was trying to educate people on attitudes and everything like that. She really believed in what we were saying, and somebody said, well, if you like that, you should see the teen book that these guys did. And she said, well, it's okay, my teenager, you know, I'm a good example, a good role model, and my teenagers are fine, thanks very much. But she sent it to her anyway, and the book apparently sat on her desk for about a month, and she finally got around to cracking it open, and what she did is she got her two kids, a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old, and they sat down and they read it together, and it's a very colorful book, and there's plenty of exercises, and so they did all of these. They read it together, and they talked about it. You know, really good parenting example here, and they did the exercises together, and she said it was really, really wonderful. She had an amazing time. They all got so much out of it. She said at the end of it, the 10-year-old said, Mom, why are you giving me an allowance? Why aren't you taking that money and investing it for me? so that I will be rich down the road. You know, he was scolding her because she was giving him an allowance, and he had now seen the light and gone, wow, I could be rich when I'm older, and I could, you know, buy a house, I could afford things, and why am I squandering this money? Don't give me the money, I'll just squander it. So, you know, that education was a wonderful story. I'm glad you shared it with us.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, you know, I wrote two other companion books, which, you know, I have, you know, Keys for Kids and Keys for Teens, and I just try to use in Keys for Kids to start shaping the attitudes toward money with kids, because that's everything. It's everything, because, you know, you get these kids that have been given everything, and then they're just like, well, what do you mean I can't have it?
Exactly.
I know you have the money, and they're like, well, actually, no, I don't. I lost my job, and I can't pay for this, you know. So, but then, you know, you've got to, you know, get kids out of that I'm the center of the universe thing and be able to realize that there's, you know, a bigger world out there. And if you lay the foundation and give them the right tools, like this young boy made such an amazing correlation with the information that he had just learned and his allowance. I mean, so they can put the skills together, but, you know, people need the tools. That's just what it is they need the tools and the opportunities to be able to create that. So, anyway, I just want to thank the both of you for coming on the show. It's been great having you. People can go to your website for more information and to order your books at abcguys.com, correct?
Correct.
All right. And
go to your website and go through you to Amazon or whatever makes them comfortable.
Yeah, on the show page, it's linked through Amazon, as well as it's also listed on our page at unlockyourwealth.com. Well, best of luck to both of you, and continue your mission, because I know you're on the right path, because I'm right behind you.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm sorry that it's over. I was just having fun. I think we could talk for another hour anyway, but I applaud what you're doing as well, and thank you for doing the books that you did.
Oh, great. Well, you know what? We'll have you on next season if you're that excited. We'll bring you back.
Great.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Heather.
And we'll be back with more Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio after this.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
A weatherman named Larry Chovica, a news reporter named Fifi Furferfester, an octopus-riding hermit named Gus. Read all about it in Laborless Magazine, the fictional lifestyle magazine from the town of Laborless, available at sociallyacceptable.org.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagenhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
The best things in life are free.
Welcome back to the broadcast. You are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I'm your hostess with the Financial Moses here in our second hour. of the show this Saturday, Monday, May 30th. For those of you that are joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. We broadcast our show every Saturday at 10 and bring you crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of financial independence. And today, it will be no less exciting because we are moving to our regular scheduled segment. She was on vacation last week, but our financial correspondent, Karen Gurm, is ready to bring you this week's News by the Numbers. Karen, we missed you last week.
Oh, thank you, Heather. I missed you guys, too. I downloaded the broadcast, though, and it was fabulous.
It would have been more so if you were here, though. So please enlighten us on this week's numbers.
Okay, this week from MSN Money by Charlie Blaine and Elizabeth Strott. A late rally pushes stocks higher with energy and metals and metal stocks leading the way. Crude oil topped $66 a barrel for the first time since November. Inflation will be a worry in the coming months, though consumers are feeling better about the economy. General Motors heads towards bankruptcy. A late rally pushed stocks higher on Friday, and the major indexes enjoyed gains for the third month in a row, the longest monthly winning streak since August through October 2007. The market's big push since mid-winter reflects a belief among investors that the economy is getting ready to recover, probably later this year or early in 2010. There are, however, growing concerns that inflationary pressures are beginning to build and could be a problem next year. The Dow Jones Industrials finished the day up 97 points, nearly 1.25%, to 8,500. The Standard & Poor's 500 index was up 12 points, or nearly 1.5%, to 919. And the NASDAQ Composite Index closed up 23 points, or 1.3%, to 1,774. Just about all of the gains came in the last hour of the day, but the close represented the beginning of a change in the forces powering the market, with commodities becoming the biggest driver. Crude oil, which topped $66 a barrel for the first time since November, jumped nearly 30% in May, its biggest monthly gain since March of 1999. The Dow finished May up 4.1%, with the S&P 500 up 5.3%, and the NASDAQ up 3.3%. In the last 3 months, the blue chip index has risen nearly 20.5%, with the S&P 500 up 25% and the NASDAQ up 28.8%. Since the big rally erupted on March 10th, the gains are even larger, nearly 30% for the Dow, 36% for the S&P 500, and nearly 40% for the NASDAQ. And that is your News by the Numbers this week. I'm Karen Gurm.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was so great to have you back on the broadcast. And now we move into our nuts and bolts segment, the moment you've all been waiting for, with this week's key, no seasonal exceptions. This key piggybacks onto our take emotion out of the picture key. And this one is important because while we've learned to dissociate our emotions when we start our financial planning and we're able to be able to discern between our needs and wants a little bit more effectively and make realistic and objective decisions as opposed to emotional ones, this is where everybody tends to drop the proverbial ball. And that's when it comes to holidays, special occasions, and personal, you know, events that require some sort of recognition. And this is where people start making excuses. Well, yes, I'm good with my money, but just this one thing is going to happen, or just this is, I just need to do this, or I just need to do that. And people start getting all caught up in saying, well, it's just for this, you know, like, oh, Bobby will never have another third birthday, so we have to have clowns and rides and a jumpy thingy and all of that stuff. And the three-year-old is probably not even going to remember it. And a party with their friends running around and eating cake and writing on the walls and doing the things that little kids do. Clearly you can tell I'm not a parent of a small child. They're not going to remember it. So you're just spending all this money to create this event that's not going to be remembered or tangible to someone. And now you put yourself in bigger financial jeopardy than you may have been in when you made the decision to go ahead with that elaborate event. Commemoration of different special events, graduations, bar bat mitzvahs, all of that stuff, and holidays especially, is when people just lose their mind and they react emotionally and then try to justify it by the significance of whatever that event is. And that does nobody any good. And like we shared with our previous guests, it doesn't have to be a nasty breakup with whatever you're doing is wrong, but you can employ the rules of etiquette to very simply help understand what your obligation truly is. And if you're the person that says, well, I have to get them a gift, they got me a gift, and you know, if you don't necessarily know, as we learned from our Calm Council for Cash Crisis, you don't necessarily know what people's finances are because of the fact that nobody talks about money. So they may give you an elaborate or ornate and very expensive present. But nowhere in the rules of etiquette does it say you have to return in kind. All etiquette says is you have to be a gracious recipient. Okay, you know, just say thank you, send a note card, bake a cake, recognize them in a very special way that's personal, but doesn't have to necessarily be significantly material. You don't have to go tit for tat. You know, there's nothing that says that. Now, if you have folks in your life that only give because they expect something in return, those are people that you need to reevaluate what is your true foundation for your relationship with them. Is it all about money? Is it all about finance, what you can do for them, what you can buy for them? Because if so, right now is not the good time, if you're financially struggling, to have to be competing with that, to always have to be the one to buy lunch or buy drinks or that sort of stuff, if you're financially pinched. And if that's the only way that you're going to be able to associate with these people, you probably need to reevaluate that relationship and, like Jodine says, have a conversation sooner rather than later, because what you resist persists. So if you confront that right up in the beginning, when it first starts, you know, and when your financial picture changes and you address it with those people and just say, look, I would love to continue to go out, but I can't keep picking up the tab and I have to, you know, restrain myself because financially I'm having some troubles. And people should respect that. And if they don't, then it's not your issue. Isn't that wonderful? If people don't respect that you have to tighten the belt and grab a hold of that wallet a little tighter, if they can't respect that and honor that for you, then you really need to reevaluate that relationship. And, you know, I also want to share with you about holidays because it's becoming so incredibly commercial. And I'm talking about our religious holidays at the end of the year. And, you know, media has made it this just unbelievable thing. And Santa Claus, you know, has made people feel like if I don't get 50,000 presents, then my whole Christmas wasn't worth it. And I would just like to share with you, for the people that claim to be spiritual and claim to be Christians, that, you know, it's about the holiday, whether you're Jewish or you're celebrating Kwanzaa or you're celebrating whatever your religious affiliation is. It's about the event. And if you don't believe me that it's about the event, why did Jesus only get three gifts when he was born? Huh? gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And two of them were smelly. Okay? So if it's about the religion and if it's about the experience and that celebration, celebrate it. But you don't have to go nuts and overboard. Just remember that. I mean, you know, common courtesy is all people need. When people give, and if they're truly giving for the right reasons, it's for the satisfaction of enriching your life, not the anticipation of receiving. And I'm going to share this little bit of insight with you as food for thought. Mull this over. Think about this, because you can apply this to your life very simply. And when you hear this, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that makes total sense. I don't know why I didn't think of that sooner. But if anybody has ever taken a plane flight, and on that airplane, as they're detailing to you all of the security features and emergency equipment on board that plane, they tell you about the oxygen masks. And they say, when the oxygen masks drop, you must put your oxygen mask on first before giving assistance to someone else. So if you don't have the financial resources, then you shouldn't be doing it, because you need to take care of you first, because you can't take care of other people unless you're whole. So we need to focus on our wholeness before we can take care of others. And it's so important. Otherwise, you're just like the title of Harvey McKay's book, Beware the Naked Man Who Offers You His Shirt. Because chances are that person is giving in order to create some sort of sense of obligation, because you know they can't afford to be giving. So this is an important key, because you could be great in all the others, but you lose it, and one financial event can be so catastrophic and devastating, like a $3,000 or $4,000 birthday party, that could wreck you for the entire year. So this is why we have to focus and be good and not allow seasonal exceptions to deter us from our goals of financial independence. So you all are waiting for your key statement. The key statement for this week is, I am brilliant when it comes to managing my money. And I acknowledge that in order to become truly successful with my money, I know I have to be more vigilant at holidays and special occasions, because going overboard serves no one, especially me. Our key affirmation this week is, I am gracious, and when I receive, I am a gracious recipient, and I am conservative with my gift giving. And I am conservative with my gift giving. And your key action item for the week, especially because it's graduation time, and don't we want to buy our kids new cars, new clothes, new everything with a big dollar amount attached to that price tag? Our key action item is, when gift giving or remembering someone's special occasion or commemoration, begin with a card and work from there. Begin with a card and work from there. That's the last thing that people think of. Oh, I better get a card. Start with the card. And then if it's more appropriate, move to something else. But you don't need to. Start with the card. Recognition is what everybody needs. And time spent with a person is more valuable than any material object that you could ever give them that may wear out or break. So keep that in perspective. Being in their life is more important than the stuff you give them during your lifetime. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on this broadcast. Thanks again for making Money May so successful. If you would like daily money tips, suggestions, and inspirational quotes to get through your day, please follow us on Twitter. We tweet regularly. To follow us, please sign up and follow at Unlock Your Wealth. Unlock YR Wealth. Unlock YR Wealth. Become a fan of our Facebook page, and also you can check out our MySpace at myspace.com/unlockyourwealth. Additionally, our website is always changing and growing. You will have new tools, tips, and tricks in the coming weeks for you to play with. So log in and bookmark our website, www.unlockyourwealth.com. www.unlockyourwealth.com. I'd like to thank all of our sponsors for participating in our show. I'd like to thank our guests. We had Jodine Spire and Dr. Dennis Cavier and Alan Lesate to talk about their books, Please Enrich Your Life by Reading. Grab their books and publications so you too can be financially independent. Again, thanks so much, and we look forward to next week's broadcast as we kick off June with Create Credit, and we'll talk all about the upcoming changes to the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Thanks again. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America is the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.